Gripping the arms of their two chairs, I pulled myself up to my feet. "Very well, then, we'd better." Marguerite burst into the bridge, nearly bowling me over.
"Life!" she exclaimed, her eyes wide and shining. "There are living organisms in the clouds, microscopic but multi-celled. They're alive. They live in the clouds."
She was babbling so hard I thought she was close to hysteria. Her mother snapped her out of it with a single question. "You're sure?" Marguerite took a deep, gulping breath.
"I'm positive. They're alive."
Rodriguez said, "I gotta see this." I took Marguerite's arm as gently as I could and maneuvered her out into the passageway. Otherwise, there was no room on the bridge for Rodriguez to get up from his chair. We trooped behind Marguerite to her cubbyhole of a lab. As we stopped there, I realized Duchamp had also left the bridge to accompany us. We stared at the image from the miniaturized electron microscope displayed on the wall screen. I saw some watery-looking blobs flailing around slowly. They were obviously multi-celled. I could see smaller blobs and dividing walls pulsating inside them. Most of them had cilia fringing their outer edges, microscopic oars paddling away constantly, but weakly.
"They're dying in here,"
Marguerite said almost mournfully.
"It must be the temperature, or maybe the combination of temperature and pressure. It's just not working."
Staring fascinated at the wall screen, I said to her, "By God, you were right."
"It's a major discovery," Rodriguez congratulated.
"Send this to the IAA at once," Duchamp commanded. "Imagery and every bit of data you have. Get priority for this."
"But I've only..."
"Do you want a Nobel Prize or not?" Duchamp snapped. "Get this data to IAA headquarters this instant. Don't wait for Fuchs to get in first."
Marguerite nodded with understanding. For the first time since she'd burst into the bridge, she seemed to calm down, come back to reality. "I'll get Risa to establish a direct link with Geneva," Duchamp went on. "You bang out a written statement. 2 or 3 lines will be enough to establish your priority. But do it now."
"Yes,"
Marguerite said, reaching for her laptop computer.
"Right."
We left her there in her lab, bent over the computer keyboard. Duchamp headed back toward the bridge. Rodriguez and I went toward the airlock where the spacesuits were stored.
"Risa," we heard Duchamp's voice over the intercom speakers. "Report to the bridge at once."
She didn't have to repeat the command. There was no room for doubt or delay in the tone of her voice.
"Bugs in the clouds," Rodriguez said to me over his shoulder. "Who would have thought you could find anything living in clouds of sulfuric acid?"
"Marguerite did," I answered. "She was certain she'd find living organisms."
"Really?"
I nodded to his back. I had just witnessed a great discovery. Duchamp was right. Her daughter would get a special Nobel for this, just like the biologists who discovered the lichen on Mars. She expected to find living organisms on Venus, I told myself. Maybe that's the secret of making great discoveries, the stubborn insistence that there's something out there to be discovered, no matter what the others say. Chance favors the prepared mind. Who said that? Some scientist, I thought. Einstein, most likely. Or maybe Freud. We commandeered Dr. Waller and Willie Yates to help us into the spacesuits. With his bloodshot eyes watching me intently, Waller hummed quietly as I pulled on my leggings and boots, then wormed into the torso and pushed my arms through the sleeves. I found myself wondering how Marguerite's discovery was going to affect his thesis. I almost laughed aloud, thinking how the doctor's quiet voyage without interruptions had backfired on him. 2 meters away, Willa chattered like a runaway audio machine as she watched Rodriguez get into his suit. They checked out our life support backpacks and made certain all the lines and hoses were properly connected. Then we sealed our helmets. Rodriguez stepped into the airlock first. I waited for the lock to cycle, my heart revving up until I thought Risa at the comm console on the bridge must be able to hear it through the suit radio. "Relax," I commanded myself. "You've been outside before. There's nothing to be scared of." Right. The last time, Rodriguez had nearly gotten himself knocked off the ship. I had no desire to go plummeting 50-some kilometers down to the rock-hard surface of Venus. The airlock hatch slid open, and Rodriguez stepped back among us. "What's the matter?" I asked. "What's wrong?" This close, with the ship's interior lighting shining through his bubble helmet, I could see the puzzled, troubled look on his face. "Got a red light on my head up." The suit's diagnostic system, which splashed its display onto the helmet's inner surface, showed something was not functioning properly. What is it? I asked. Give me a minute, he snapped back. Then, it says here there was a pressure leak in the suit. Seems okay now, though.
Dr. Waller grasped the situation before I did. But it went red when you cycled the air out of the airlock.
Yeah, right.
We spent the better part of an hour pumping up the pressure in Rodriguez's suit until it started to balloon. Sure enough, there was a leak in his left shoulder joint. The suit fabric had a resin compound that self-repaired minor leaks, but the joints were cermet covered with plastic.
It looks frayed, Dr. Waller said, his voice brimming with curiosity.
No, more like it was singed with a flame or some source of heat.
Damn, Rodriguez grumbled.
Suit's supposed to be guaranteed.
I remembered the old joke about parachutes. If it doesn't work, bring it back and we'll give you a new one.
It was a good thing the suit's diagnostics caught the leak in the airlock. Outside, it could have killed him. So Rodriguez unfastened his helmet and wriggled out of his suit and put on one of the backup suits. We would have to repair his suit, I thought. We only carried 4 spares. Finally, he was ready and went through the airlock. No problems with the backup suit. I heard him call me in my helmet earphones.
Okay, Mr. Humphreys, come on through.
I went into the airlock and got that same old feeling of being locked into a coffin when the inner hatch slid shut. The lock cycled down, and a red warning light started blinking on the curving face of my helmet, flashing into my eyes like a rocket's red glare.
Hey, I've got a problem too, I yelled into my microphone.
The entire EVA excursion was a bust. Both our original suits were leaking, and Deschamps decided to scratch the EVA until we could determine what the problem was. I thought I knew.
Bug food.
I don't know, Marguerite said, frowning with puzzlement. It's too soon for me to tell.
Her voice was low, tired. The excitement of her discovery had worn off. Now I was presenting her with its horrifying consequences. We were walking down the passageway from her lab to the galley where we could sit together in comfort. I was leading the way for once.
It can't be a coincidence, I said over my shoulder. There's got to be a connection.
That's not necessarily true, she objected.
We reached the galley and I punched the dispenser for a cold cup of juice, then handed it to her. After I got one for myself, I sat beside her on the bench.
There are bugs out in the clouds, I said.
Microscopic multicellular creatures, yes, she agreed.
What do they eat?
I don't know. It's going to take some time to find out. I spent most of the day jury-rigging a cooler for them to live in.
What's your best guess? I demanded.
She ran a hand through her thick, dark hair.
Sulfur oxides are the most abundant compounds in the cloud droplets. They must metabolize sulfur in some way.
Sulfur? How can anything eat sulfur?
Marguerite jabbed a forefinger at me.
There are bacteria on Earth that metabolize sulfur. I would have thought you'd known that.
I had to grin. You'd be surprised at how much I don't know. She smiled back. I pulled my handheld computer from my pocket and punched up a list showing the composition of the fibers of our spacesuits. No sulfur.
Would they eat any of these materials? I asked, showing her the computer's tiny display.
Marguerite shrugged wearily.
It's too soon to know, Van. On Earth, organisms metabolize a wide range of elements and compounds. Humans need trace amounts of hundreds of different minerals.
She took a deep, sighing breath. It's got to be the bugs, I said, convinced despite the lack of evidence.
Nothing else could have eaten through the suits like that.
What about the railing? That's made of metal, isn't it?
I tapped on the handheld. Cermet, I saw. A ceramic and metal composite. Another few taps. Contains beryllium, boron, calcium, carbon, several other elements.
Maybe the organisms need trace elements the way we need vitamins, Marguerite suggested.
I went back to the list of suit materials and displayed it alongside the list of the safety rail's composition. Plenty of similarities. Although only the cermet had any measurable amount of sulfur in it, and not much at that. Then I realized that both suits had leaked at joints, not the self-repairing fabric, and the joints were made of cermet, covered with a thin sprayed-on layer of plastic.
You've got to find out what they digest, I urged Marguerite. It's vitally important.
I know, she said, rising to her feet. I'll get on it right away.